A dozen. Mission.
You're listening to This Week in Radio News. Radio news about radio waves, radio art, and more. I'm Tom Rowe, your host, and we'll travel across the ether to hear what's going on in radio news.
Lee Ballou here in Times Square. Our guest today is Professor Chad Labwick.
Well, that's right, Wally, and what I'm trying to do is teach the entire world to communicate with noises.
So you've converted the entire language into different sounds.
Well, three sentences so far.
Three sentences?
Well, yeah. Well, for example...
Are you okay?
Well, actually, what I was saying is, this is not a kneeling bus.
Well, that's amazing, and I could certainly see where that would be helpful in most parts of the world.
Well, thank you, Wally. Well, my favorite new one is the beep.
Which means?
Mike's not home. Leave a message.
Well, perhaps you'd like to share that with the folks at home.
Oh, sure. I'd love to.
That was the American comedy duo Bob and Ray, Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding. Bob Elliott passed away this week, and Ray Goulding passed away in 1990. So we're going to listen back to some classic radio comedy from Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding, Bob and Ray on the radio. We'll also hear the headlines in radio news. Astro Noise, from filmmaker and activist Laura Poitras, opens at the Whitney Museum in New York February 5th, running through May 1st. The images in the exhibit broke news last week. Some of the pictures in the show are descrambled images from Israeli and Syrian drone feeds. The Intercept January 29th published documents leaked from Edward Snowden that showed the United States and Britain have hacked transmissions from secret drone flights and communications from the Israeli Air Force since 1998. Yuval Steinitz, the Minister of National Infrastructure and Energy, told Army Radio last week, quote, "We will now have to look and consider changing the encryption, certainly," unquote. Poitras is forever linked to Snowden and has been detained, interrogated, and searched dozens of times at airports and also won an Academy Award for Citizen 4, the documentary about Snowden. The Whitney describes Astronoise saying, quote, "This immersive installation of new work builds on topics important to Poitras, including mass surveillance, the war on terror, the U.S. drone program, Guantanamo Bay prison, occupation, and torture." On January 28th, Republicans held their final debate before voters began casting ballots around the nation, and by our count, less than 2 minutes were devoted to internet or broadcast-related matters. Ohio Governor John Kasich was asked about encryption and said it was better not to talk about it. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul repeatedly inserted that the rest of the candidates were ignoring basic rights of Americans by supporting warrantless government surveillance. Let's hear what they said. First Kasich, then Paul.
To encrypted cell phone technology, which protects most smartphones that we all have from hacking. And it includes our phones, and it also protects the cell phones of the terrorists. Now, the tech companies and a group of MIT scientists, smart guys, right, warn that if they create a way for the FBI to have a backdoor into our encrypted communications, then the bad guys will exploit it too. And they say that this is going to cause more security problems than it would solve for everyday Americans. Are they wrong?
Well, look, the Joint Terrorism Task Forces need resources and they need tools. And those are made up of the FBI, state, and local law enforcement. And Megan, it's best not to talk anymore about backdoors and encryption. It'll get solved, but it needs to be solved in the Situation Room of the White House with the technology
this
folks.
This is public testimony.
Yeah, but I just have to tell you that it's best with some of these things not be said.
The NSA is another big issue. Ted said he was for, you know, NSA reform, but then he told Marco Rubio, oh, no, I voted for the bill because I'm for the government collecting 100% of your cell phone records. I don't think Ted can have it both ways. They want to say they're getting some of the liberty vote, but we don't see it happening at all. We think we're going to do very well in Iowa with the liberty vote.
We'll come back to...
Well, I mean, I was talking about it in the question. Just very quickly, I'd like to respond. The bulk collection of your phone data, the invasion of your privacy, did not stop one terrorist attack. I don't think you have to give up your liberty for a false sense of security. When we look at this bulk collection, the court has looked at this. Even the court declared it to be illegal. If we want to collect the records of terrorists, let's do it the old-fashioned way. Let's use the Fourth Amendment. Let's put a name on a warrant. Let's ask a judge for it. Let's respect the history of our country. John Adams said that we fought the war for independence because we wanted to fight against generalized warrants. Let's don't forget that.
That was John Kasich, then Rand Paul, the recent Republican presidential debate. The Washington Post reports that Iran's state media boasted January 29th that they flew a radio-controlled drone over a U.S. Navy aircraft carrier in the Persian Gulf. A U.S. Navy spokesman would not confirm the authenticity of the video released in Iran, but said that on January 12th, an Iranian drone was spotted over the French carrier Charles de Gaulle and the American carrier USS Harry S. Truman in the Persian Gulf. The U.S. Navy says they were in international waters and the drone was unarmed, so they left it alone. A U.S. Navy helicopter was launched from the Truman to view the drone. The same day, 10 U.S. sailors were detained by Iranian Revolutionary Guard naval forces nearby, closer to Farsi Island, after their boat veered off course with mechanical trouble. Those U.S. sailors were paraded hands up on Iranian television before being released.
Now the late weather and sports brought to you by Frank and Irma's Dance Studio. First the weather, and here's Hester E. Moresby.
Hi, everybody. Well, wasn't today something? Well, let's not get into that. I'll have tomorrow's forecast right after a word from our sponsor.
Hi, this is Rudolph.
And Irma.
Of the Rudolph and Irma Dance Studios. And if you have a dollar bill,
any dollar bill,
that's green, it entitles you to one free dance lesson at Rudolph and Irma's Dance Studios, located at 5913 Harper Street, Arbor, in Long Island.
And if you don't have a dollar bill,
any Lincoln Head penny will do.
And if you don't happen to be one of the lucky holders of a Lincoln Head penny,
you can show us an empty change purse.
Or an empty wallet.
And still get a free dance lesson, provided you give us a verbal statement of intent that you plan to buy a wallet.
Or a change purse. And that address, once again, is
Rudolph and Irma's Dance Studios at 5913 Harper Street, Arbor, in Long Island.
And here's tomorrow's forecast, windy. And now over to Biff Burns and sports up to now.
Thank you, Hester. I'll have the sports scores for you in just a moment after a word from our sponsor.
Rudolph and Irma's Dance Studios at 5913 Harper Street, Arbor, in Long Island. Where you'll learn the breakaway fade, popularized by Henry Armstead, Wizard of the Waxed Floors.
Or perhaps you'll be taken by the conga manga, combination of the conga
and the manga, as taught by Perry Sanchez, the hero of the hardboards, at
Rudolph and Irma's Dance Studios in Arbor, in Long Island. And for you older folk who prefer a less lively dance step, chat with us about learning the creek.
A mild dance step made well known by that septuagenarian of slide, Amos Kneesett.
And, of course, there are the more popular steps you can learn.
Like the jockey trot.
And the hot coal hop.
And, of course, the very much in vogue cocktail dip.
As taught by Elsa Makewell, the siren of the surfaces.
All this at Rudolph and Irma's Dance Studios in Arver, Long Island.
Now for the scores. Ohio State. Uh-oh, our time is up. That's all the time for sports tonight. This is Biff Burns saying so long.
Rudolph and Irma's Dance Studios in Arver, Long Island.
Where you'll find dancing a pleasure.
On our deep pile rugs.
And tastefully furnished offices.
And don't forget to ask about our colored rotating chandelier.
Which throws a myriad of multicolored lights on each dancing student.
And for those of you who care for music while you're dancing, arrangements can be made for melodies to be played.
And be sure to ask about the chalk footprint method of dancing.
With footprints skillfully drawn by Lionel Warp, the Titan of Taps.
All this at
Rudolph and Irma's Dance Studios, located at 5913 Harper Street, Arbor, in Long Island. Oh, and will the soft shoe dancer who left his soft shoes at the studio please pick them up this week?
Before they melt completely? Yes, they're getting sticky. Oh, I'm sorry, Rudolph. Did you want to say that together with me?
It's all right.
Togetherness is important, though.
Especially in the dance business.
That's right.
Stay tuned now for The Late Show, Pigskin Partners with my greet up John and the late Flemin Stirrup.
That was the late weather and sports from Bob and Ray, and we're listening back to the classic radio comedy team this week as Bob Elliott died on February 2nd at the age of 92. Now, anyone that doesn't remember Bob and Ray from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and even into the 80s on the David Letterman show may remember Bob Elliott's son, Chris Elliott, the man under the seats on the David Letterman show and later a television and movie star in Hollywood. If you're trying to tell them apart, Bob was the more soft-spoken one, Ray the more deep-voiced, blustery force in the comedy duo. And one of Elliott's main characters was Wally Ballou, the roving radio reporter. Let's hear a few Wally Ballou reports.
And this is radio's highly regarded Wally Ballou with another Man of the Street broadcast in our series of interviews with interesting people from all over this country of ours. I wonder if I could chat with you, sir, just a minute.
I'd be more than delighted. It's a pleasure to be talking to a radio microphone.
Well, you don't get a chance very often, that's for sure.
Well,
what's your name, please?
My name is Ward Smith. I'm from Ellisville, Massachusetts.
Isn't that down on Cape Cod somewhere, Ellisville?
Yes, just at the tip of the start of Cape Cod.
That's beautiful country down that way. What do you do, sir?
Well, I thought you might guess. I'm a cranberry grower, and I own cranberry bogs.
Is that so? I've always wanted to know a little bit about the raising of cranberries. They're such beautiful things when you see them growing.
Well, they grow in bogs, you know, Mr. Ballou. And
you have to be very careful of frosts, don't you?
That's right. You have to flood the bogs if there's danger of frost. And then you have to harvest them when they're big and red and ripe and juicy and bitter as anything. You know, they're bitter.
Yes. And then, of course, after you harvest them in the fall, I guess, don't you?
Yes, late summer.
After you do that, you turn them over for processing. Do you process them yourself?
What do you mean by that, Mr. Ballou?
By that, I mean, do you have your own factory for squeezing the juice out of them?
Squeezing the juice out of cranberries? Well, I never heard.
Yes, to make cranberry juice. Such as you find in your cranberry juice cocktail, that sort of thing.
Well, now, you've triggered me a little. I've never thought of that.
That would be a good thing to do with them.
Well, I've been selling them in a basket like strawberries, cranberry shortcake, and they really don't move that way.
Well, of course, you could also sell them to people who want to make jelly out of them. Cranberry jelly is very delicious.
Jelly out of cranberry? Well, is there pectin in them or something?
Well, I suppose there is, and you could put certain additives in them.
And,
cranberry sauce is delicious, with the whole cranberry in it.
Well, what would that be, a dessert?
Yeah, no, people serve this with things like turkey and certain kinds of meat.
Well, there
are a great many uses for cranberries, sir, that I think maybe you haven't stumbled upon as yet.
Could you use them in any other way?
Well, I can't.
Could you make like glass with them?
No, I don't think you can make glass out of them. But
you can squeeze them. Let me write this down.
You can
squeeze them. You
have a pencil?
Here's one. Jelly, right?
Make jelly out of them.
Juice.
Cranberry juice.
J-U-I-C-E. What?
I-C-E.
I-C-E. I thought there was a J in juice.
J-U-I-C-E.
Oh, J-U-I-C-E.
Cranberry sauce.
Yeah.
And you can even make cranberry ice cream. It's delicious. Cranberry sherbet.
Well, I don't know how to thank you. This is...
quite all right. We're always happy to be of assistance to our...
30 years interviews. I've been selling them as a whole thing in a basket. Never thought of it.
Well, I'm glad we've opened up a new field for you, Mr. Smith, and give our best to everybody back at Cape Cod when you get home.
Up in Ellisville. Right, I will. Well, there's only one other family there.
Uh-huh. Well, that's all the news that we see from our vantage point here in the street. And so, for this Man of the Street interview, this is radio's Wally Ballou, winner of 7 news coverage awards, returning you to our studio.
Lee Ballou, speaking from the general offices of the Uncomfortable Air Conditioning Company in Berwyn, Illinois, and... I'm talking with Mr. Marvin Leppert, the president of the firm. As I understand it, your company deliberately makes air conditioners that... Wait a minute, engineer, let me take that again. Cut that out, I'll take that last one. As I understand it, Mr. Leppert, your company deliberately makes air conditioners that create a good deal of discomfort.
Well, yes, our company deliberately makes air conditioners that create a good deal of discomfort. Of course, most firms in our field make their air conditioners deliberately. In fact, we've found that it's almost impossible to make an air conditioner by accident.
Well, what I meant was the discomfort factor in yours is deliberate.
That's right. Now, I have one of our Model 48Bs going on full blast here in the office now, and I think you'll have to agree that the agony it's putting you through is worse than anything you'd normally expect from an air conditioner.
Yeah, I'd say it's about 15 above in here, and the wind is blowing it off the air conditioner. Edit that out a little later, engineer. Blowing it off the air conditioner at a good 30 to 35 miles an hour.
Well,
I'll fix that up by the time it gets out of the air.
Oh, well, you're close. Actually, it's 12 above, and the wind velocity is 38 knots.
38.
The best part is that there's absolutely no.
Sorry, they'll cut that out.
No regulator of any kind on the machine. You can't turn it down, and the only way to turn it off is to chop it to pieces with an axe.
I don't want to ask you to give away any trade secrets, Mr. Leppard. But is there any special reason why you only manufacture air conditioners that make people miserable?
Will they cut that out later?
What?
Or I cleared my throat.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, will they get that, too?
Yes, that'll be gone.
Yeah. Well, there are two special reasons.
I've got one of the best engineers, and he'll see that it's fixed before it goes out of the air.
Fine. Well, to answer your question, if I remember it now, there are two special reasons why. One is that we don't know how to manufacture any other kind, and the second reason is that we have a big backlog of orders for these, see?
Want to clean your throat?
Sure.
They'll cut it
Excuse
out.
Me. Will they cut that out?
Yeah. Frankly, I can't imagine who in the world would want one of these air conditioners.
Well, mostly, our business comes from stores that depend on a fast customer turnover, Wally. You see, on a hot day, people are lured into the place by the sign out front that says air conditioned.
Right.
But when they get inside and see how air-conditioned it really is, they buy whatever they came for, and they get out as fast as they can.
In other words, there's no problem with shoppers just dawdling around to keep out of the heat.
Now, Mr. Ballou, to dawdle in a store that's equipped with one of our machines is to court frostbite, at the very least.
Well, I can appreciate that. I'm
Great,
standing
here also,
shivering.
Pick up quite a few orders from motels that are having trouble getting their guests to leave by the normal checkout time.
I could see how one of your air conditioners would make even the worst kind of late sleeper want to get the let out.
You bet. We've had reports of amazing results. For example, one motel with a 10 a.m. checkout deadline was lucky if it got everybody going by noon until our air conditioners were installed. And now, hardly anybody sticks around. Much later than 4 in the morning. Can you believe that?
Oh, wow.
And the place is deserted by 6 o'clock.
Well, with the booming demand for your uncomfortable air conditioners, I guess you show you a tidy profit here, Mr. Leppard.
Well, we should be, but we're not. You see, our factory is air-conditioned. And on the average working day, about 80% of our help is home with pneumonia.
Well, I'm surprised you could hold the absenteeism down to 80%.
Well, we only hire workers who come from hardy stock. But even so, we never have enough of them on the job at one time to get anything done. And our head bookkeeper predicts that we'll go bankrupt either Tuesday or Wednesday of next week.
Well, in a way, having you out of business might be a boom to mankind. And thanks for giving us a part of what little time you have left. This is Wally Ballou.
Here now are Webley Webster and Wally Ballou with the Bob and Ray Editorial of the Air for this week.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you very much.
It's time to look the issues squarely in the face.
The problem concerns all of us. If it continues to be ignored, the dismissal of what is now a routine matter may result in its becoming even more grave as time, valuable time, goes by.
Hindsight, it was once noted, is an admirable means of settling affairs that have grown too big to be disposed of at the time of conflict.
Yes, but this is an issue that must be dealt with now, for history is the ledger of time. And what we have here is a notation in the ledger of history. Let there be no mistake about that.
Now, most of us have shown a willingness to stand up for the things we want, the things we hold so close to us. We've not wavered, nor have we sidestepped problems that seemed at the time to have no resolution.
Instead, bold, imaginative strides forward were taken. This is what we are used to, the habit of success.
So it was much of a shock to us, as it probably was, good listeners, to you, when we heard opposition voices being raised.
Why the belated outcry?
Why indeed, dear listener? Why do they oppose us now?
Why do they choose this particular time to make themselves heard?
And why we must ask
what
ourselves, at this
about?
Moment in our affairs, do they want this issue tabled?
We cannot agree with what reasonable one
says about listening to Webley Webster and Wally Ballou with this week's Bob and Ray editorial of the year.
No alone.
And we'll be back with a spooky sound in just 10 seconds.
Double under.
And now here's a spooky sound for you. Boy. And until tomorrow, this is Ray Goulding reminding you to write if you get work.
Bob Elliott reminding you to hang by your thumb.
This is a surprise time for me because I haven't had an opportunity to meet and talk with our next guest. Incidentally, this chair here sat in Mary Magoon's dining room for years and years. I don't know if that has any special meaning to you, sir. No. But would you sit there now and tell us your name, please?
Harlow P. Whitcomb.
And where are you from?
From Glens Falls.
New York.
New York.
And what do you do?
I am the president and recording
secretary.
Secretary of the STOA.
What does that stand for?
Slow Talkers of America. We believe
in speaking slowly,
in forming
your words, thoughts,
our ideas and opinions clearly before
speaking.
We speak. We are here
in New York City.
In the city of New York. Attending
a convention.
Our annual
convention.
Membership
convention.
Convention. All of our members, all 200
members
and 50
members,
seven
members,
are here
speaking
talking
slowly so that you'll never be misunderstood,
as opposed to the members of the
STOA.
T-O-A.
O-A.
A. The fast
Talkers of America.
Talkers
of America.
Of America.
America.
Our credo
is to speak slowly.
Goes something like this.
Would you lower the curtain, please?
Making
me a nervous wreck.
That was the Slow Talker from Bob and Ray. We're tuned into the radio comedy of Bob and Ray, Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding, as Bob Elliott died February 2nd. The duo began as radio announcers. Elliott was a disc jockey and Goulding a newsreader in Boston on WHDH-AM in the 1940s. Eventually, they teamed together for Matinee with Bob and Ray, a 15-minute show that expanded to a half an hour as its popularity skyrocketed. They continued on the radio for four decades on NBC, CBS, and the Mutual Networks, and on New York City radio stations WINS, WOR, and WHN. In the mid-70s, they were the drive-time afternoon hosts on WOR, and their radio careers ended in the late 80s on National Public Radio.
And now, listeners, a few moments with Leonard Bernstein as he explains crooning, its origins, and its place in the musical world. Mr. Leonard Bernstein.
Crooning, a cacophony of sound cascading from a verdant musical jungle? Or is it a well-planned, throaty accumulation of sounds by a great organizer of melody? We shall see. Mr. Besdale, if you please.
Body out and bow, rotten diddy poo.
Thank you, Mr. Besdale. Now that we have heard, we begin to wonder. One almost thinks of crooning as a fragmentary bit of Americana, revealing yet quasi-damaging in its consistency. And while the music is being paraphrased, listen to this strain.
Yada booty didn't do, roadie bada deetin' that and bop and boo.
And so we begin to see what Gerald Dekhart was getting at. Nothing frightening about it, indeed. It's a fructifying experience. You see, Dekhart was not so much interested in musical content as he was in the elasticity of the notes. The music would be sung heartily or with a moue of distaste. Mr. Besdale.
Mada doo dee doo. Oh, bop-dum, bop-dum, dee-dee-dee-dee-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. Bop-bop-doo.
Slowly we come to terms with crooning, but it was not until 1923 that we realized the dynamism, the inbreeding of crooning with the more stable or unprogresso kind of music. So the cross-fertilization had begun. The inculcation, the emergence, the precipitation, the entree, so to speak, the entrance to the back door of music had been accomplished, and there was no going back. I want you to pay particular note to the enchanting Dekhart variation here, Mr. Besdale.
Let up, dee dee, no!
How can two themes run concurrently? Well, it's a tribute to the genius of Dekhart. While one melody advances rubato, the other recedes contrapuntally into the background, diminuendo, barely making itself heard, only to return with mild influence.
Mat-mat-mo!
If that sounded oppressive, it's exactly what Dekhart set out to achieve, the bittersweet. Again, we hear the melancholy yearnings of one sad note overtaking another sad note without taxing the structure. The Weltschmerz of these Dekhart outpourings never ceases to amaze me. Mr. Besdale, would you please finish this particular piece we're dealing with now? So there you have it. Dekhart knew that sooner or later he'd have to be dealt with. His music was a force that could not, would not be denied.
In my good old summer time.
So there we have it. Dekhart knew that sooner or later he'd have to be dealt with. His music was a force that could not, would not be denied. His was a world of melody. Melody meant all the world to him. I think we must reckon crooning as a serious, yet simpatico art form. Not to do so would be unwise. Bravissimo, my good friend Dekhart. I applaud you. Thank you for what you did.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.